Welcome to Talking Out with Marla P. Today's guest is Tamara Gerchik. Tamara is an autistic practicing attorney, wife, and mother of three neurodivergent children. She focuses on education and advocacy related to autism, neurodivergence, mental health, and disability, as well as their intersection with parenting. Tamara is committed to creating a more equitable world for disabled folks and believes that lived experience is an essential tool to provide information, support, and resources to individuals, families, and the public. Thank you for joining me, Tamara.
Thank you for having me, Marla.
You're welcome. What I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the floor to where you can share your story, and I'll just chime in here and there are questions, okay?
All right. Sounds great.
Okay. It's all yours.
All right. My notes just closed on me. That's great. Well, we're just going to go with it. I know what happened. So I am from Cleveland, Ohio, which I am very proud of, which is why I mention it. And I grew up in Cleveland proper, and I went to a very small Christian school, which was great because I needed some close attention. And when I was young, no one really thought there was anything different about me. I was just very precocious.
Okay.
And very driven. I was kind of weird, though, and no one really thought anything about it. So I did not know growing up that I was autistic. I did not know that I had a disability, which was, in retrospect, very hard. So, you know, I traveled through this small school, moved over to public school, which is a very difficult transition. It was a much bigger setting. Everything was different. There were all these new social rules I had no idea about because I had been in this small school, and also because, unbeknownst to me, I was autistic and has struggled with social rules. So I made it all the way through school, did very well, graduated at the top of my class,
awesome.
Went on to college, didn't do as well there. It was more social struggles and just college is different and the study skills that needed are different. And I had mostly made it through high school by memorizing everything, which I think is definitely an autistic trait of mine. So I made it through, though, and I was the first person in my family to graduate college.
That's awesome.
So everyone was super excited. I was really excited. I worked for a small business as an office manager for a few years, and then I went to law school.
Awesome.
Law school was a whole new kind of hard with more social rules that I didn't understand. And I had kind of an inkling at that point that maybe I had ADHD, but I didn't really know what to do about it or if it was even real, because my whole life I had kind of been told, like, you're so high functioning, you're so high achieving, you can't possibly have mental illness, there can't be anything wrong, you're fine. Okay. So I was kind of writing that out because I just assumed that professionals who had told me this knew what they were talking about. So I made it through law school and struggled to get a job. I really, really wanted to be a legal aid attorney. I volunteered for almost every legal aid organization in Northeast Ohio at some point. And those are apparently very hard jobs to get. So I was doing contract work. I had a small solo firm for a while doing mostly family law and juvenile work.
Okay.
But also whatever walked through the door, you know, when you start your own small business, you're just happy for the work. So, and in a way it was great because I learned so much about the practice of law, about running a business. So I grew a lot during that time, but it was also very hard because I was struggling even more with social communication and figuring life out. Everything just felt so much harder to me than it looked to be for everyone else. And I never really could figure it out. And I met my husband. He was my neighbor.
Wow. And interesting.
Yeah. I know. I love it. It's a meet cute. I love that sort of thing. But he was my neighbor. And when I was in law school, and we eventually got married in 2015 and had our first child in 2016, which was great. And I was still doing my solo practice and everything was going pretty wonderful. But unfortunately, I ended up with severe postpartum depression, and that was awful. But the one good thing that came out of it was that I met a practitioner who took me seriously and believed how awful I felt. And everything I told her said, I'm going to help you figure this out. And we just tackled one problem after another, my lifelong insomnia, my anxiety since childhood, with the right medications. And that helped me be able to engage in therapy better. And I just started feeling like this whole new person. It was so wonderful, but something was still a little off. I just figured, I know I need to work a little harder, But after my first child was diagnosed with autism, I thought, I'm going to figure out why, you know, they don't really know the cause of autism. And I, for some reason, thought I could figure it out on the internet. So I just spent months, you know, going through every website, reading books, just reading scientific research, anything I could get my hands on to figure out how this could have happened. And one day I was sitting here clicking away on my computer and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm autistic. My child is autistic because I am. And I went down a whole new rabbit hole of autism in adults and autism in women and how we can present differently and the struggles that we may have had or do have. And that was honestly probably the most important moment of my life, finding that out about myself. And ever since then, everything in my life has just become so much better. Like just understanding yourself.
That's right.
And knowing that you struggle, it's not your fault. It's just, you know, the way your brain is wired, it's different.
That's right.
And yeah. And learning ways to support myself that are actually helpful and supportive and not harmful or detrimental or ineffective. Because I think I've gotten a lot of advice in my life that is meant for non-autistic people, and it might work for them, but it never worked for me. And I thought that was my fault and my problem. But it turns out my brain is just different. And in some ways, it's awesome. And in other ways, it presents a lot of challenges. So this has been 5 years now since I've known that I am autistic, and my life has just improved dramatically. The more supports I can put in place for myself, the more self-acceptance I develop, my career has grown. I've grown in my personal life, in my marriage, in my parenting, just, you know, being able to know who I am and make my life a life that I can live and be happy in.
That's right.
Has been really rewarding and fulfilling. And it's made me a better wife, lawyer, parent, friend. I wish this same kind of self-acceptance and discovery for not just for autistic people, certainly, but for all people. And I think it's just really empowering to have a solid idea of who you are and then tailor your life. Yeah. Tailor your life to support you in the ways that you need support, because everyone needs support.
Absolutely.
Autistic support can look a little bit different, but everyone needs support. So if we can just accept ourselves and find a way to make our life as livable as possible, you know, I think that increases the happiness factor, the satisfaction with life. And it's just really propelled me through everything. We've lost a few family members that were older in the last few years. And I feel like if I hadn't been on this journey of acceptance and improving my life, it would have been much harder. But I have a lot better control and regulation of my emotions so that I can deal with those types of situations in a healthy, productive way. And same with things like frustrations in parenting or frustrations in work. I have strategies I can use to feel my feelings, but also, again, deal with them in a productive way and channel that energy into something that produces results. And because of all of this and all my experiences and certainly finding out I was autistic despite it being so late, I have a wonderful life now. I have a wonderful family. I'm working with another young woman entrepreneur. We're starting to start a local apparel company. I have plans for a nonprofit that is geared towards supporting autistic teens and adults.
I love it.
Social opportunities as well as services that are definitely needed, especially for the adult population. There's, you know, a sort of sense in autism world that there's all these services for children and still not enough services for children. But once you become an adult, it's like we're forgotten about and we still have autism. We're still autistic. So, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that don't even have the opportunity to get support they need, let alone support that is guided by autistic and disabled people who have the lived experience to say, this is what this feels like. This is what might help. That's why I'm so passionate about both sharing my story and advocating for autistic and disabled people, leading organizations, leading policy. This who we is affected by these sorts of decisions and what is offered to us. And we have the lived experience to say what can be helpful, what can be harmful. So I've just started this year embarking on my journey to speak and advocate on behalf of our communities. And, you know, I've been doing support groups. By August, I was booked with podcasts, which is really great. I'm so lucky that I am able to share my story.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a few years really to get the confidence to be able to be proud of my story because I felt a lot of shame for a while because there's this stigma around disability, around autism. So I just didn't really even know how to feel about myself. And but now I've really grown and just done a lot of self-acceptance. I'm a big proponent of positive self-talk. It sounds so hokey, but boy, does it work. And I'm ready to share my story and I'm ready to stand up and advocate for others for the support and resources that I didn't have so that others can not struggle as much.
I see. I know you mentioned earlier you were stating when you were younger, you felt you was weird. So can you speak
Well, yeah, absolutely.
to
So I was weird.
that?
Just like generally, I have just a huge variety of interests, but as is common with autistic people, we usually have a couple intense interests. My particular one is dance. I was very involved with dance from the age of 7, and I still dance as well. I still dance and train. And just the intensity immediately which I took to it was, in retrospect, not normal, not usually what kids, at least back in the 90s, people didn't get as involved in anything as I did at a young age. I mean, now I think it's a little more common, but and you know, I had all these collections of things, just like I had so many little idiosyncrasies. And my family, I'm an only child and only grandchild, so my family just thought I was delightful and precocious and so funny. And I was, but you know, from the outside looking in, I think people probably found me quite quirky and sometimes just unusual. And I'm sure I had like social communication habits and just behaviors that were not typical. And I certainly also growing up got bullied, certainly in middle school and high school I was. And it just felt always like, why do they know? How do they know to bully me? And this has been a common sense I get from other autistic people. It's somehow people just know you're different and they pick on you. And so, you know, there was something weird or different about me. So I got picked on, especially once I moved over to public school. I came from a lower socioeconomic background, living in Cleveland proper, and went to a relatively well-off suburb. My dad and I lived in an apartment and, you know, 5 minutes away from these what I would still consider mansions. And so between the socioeconomic difference, being in a new school in a new district, and just being not neurotypical, somehow I was, you know, a target. And I didn't know how to stick up for myself. I didn't know how to defend myself. And I just kind of got the sense after a while that I deserved it. And that really contributed to my negative mental health, which, you know, got pretty bad in high school. I think I mentioned, I believe I've had anxiety most of my life, but I had pretty bad depression in high school. And that's when I was first diagnosed with depression and anxiety. Little did I know there was quite a bit more going on. But even from probably when I was in middle school and high school, I'd already developed, though, this just determination and persistence, drive to accomplish things. And my parents always, I mean, my parents really built me up. They didn't know I was autistic either, but they really built me up and told me that I was going to accomplish wonderful, great things and that I was so wonderful and smart and, you know, all these things. So on one hand, I had this sense that I have all these good qualities, but then on the other hand, I feel terrible because I, you know, had mental health struggles because of not knowing I was disabled and struggling, being bullied. Just this general experience of middle and high school is, you know, can be difficult for many people. But you know, that kind of really started my not just my mental health struggle, but just it reinforced my persistence and drive and determination to help myself, which I tried for so many years to do, but just wasn't taken seriously. But I kept trying and I kept trying and I kept asking and I kept complaining about feeling poorly. And, you know, no one really took me seriously until I was a mother, which I just still think is just strange. And even as a mother now, I still probably weird. I do things differently. You know, I'm autistic, so I just have mannerisms and habits. And my family is neurodivergent as well. So we just do what works. And And I don't always feel like I fit in with the other moms, but I've learned that that's okay. And I can learn from them and they can learn from me, or we can go our separate ways. It's all okay.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So like for my listeners, for those who don't know what autism is, can you just give them a brief in your own words?
Yeah, absolutely.
What the early signs of autism is?
Yeah. So autism is a neurodevelopmental condition that affects a variety of things. And every autistic person is different and experiences these things in different ways. It can affect social communication patterns and sometimes folks' ability to speak. There are non-speaking autistic people. There's late speaking autistic people. It also is people with autism. They experience repetitive behaviors, often called stimming. It's actually a way to self-regulate, but this could be anything from playing with fidget toys to bouncing your leg, which I'm doing right now. I do it all day long, but you know, it's harmless. So I just, you know, if it helps me stay in tune with myself, I just roll with it. Some other features of autism would be most of us have poor mental health, either because of trying to deal with our own autistic traits or because of bullying or because of, you know, various ways that we try to deal with a world that wasn't really built with autistic people in mind. And most of us have sensory sensitivities. I know myself, I'm sensitive to heat. I'm sensitive to sunlight. I almost always have sunglasses on outside. I just always think it's too bright and it makes me feel bad. So I just wear my sunglasses.
Okay.
And I'm okay. And these are all a lot of these can be seen from a young age. Usually kids are often diagnosed around 2. I think the average age of diagnosis now is 4. And the things that people noticed the most, and that I noticed in my eldest, were he wasn't speaking. He didn't speak until he was 3.5 after he started school. That's I think the biggest one. People usually start to suspect autism when their child isn't talking, isn't babbling, isn't saying words on the normal schedule, but also not responding to their name, which all 3 of my kids do still do that sometimes, which drives this mama crazy, but their brain is just doing something else. They're not trying to be disrespectful. They're just, their brain is working on something else right then. So they're not tuned in to me saying, hey, I need you to pay attention to me or do a thing. They're busy in their brains. And then of course, stimming. Kids can stim in lots of different ways. One really common one that my eldest definitely did was just like little finger movements in front of their face. And it's hard to describe. They're just like, it's like they're playing with their fingers in front of their face. And my son did this all the time. And I just thought, well, I've never seen that. That's different. And before he was diagnosed, I didn't really know anything about autism. I was actually ironically worried about having a child with autism. I thought I can handle anything as a parent, but I don't know if I could handle that.
Right.
And it turns out I can handle it because I'm also autistic, and that, you know, and in many ways, I'm thankful that it's something my children and I experience together, because we can normalize being, you know, having our brain be different and having different behaviors and needs. And we work together. Obviously, I am the adult and I try to be the one who is emotionally regulated and teaches them strategies. But sometimes they're teaching me and I see what they do to calm their little brains and bodies. And sometimes I'm taking notes for myself. But there's lots of, you know, stereotypical signs of autism. Attraction to water is one of them. Many, many autistic children love water. And that's all I can think of off the top of my head. And there are certainly also lots of co-occurring conditions with autism. ADHD is way up there, something my son and I both experience. And lots of gastrointestinal problems that I luckily don't experience. But I know a lot of autistic people who do, and just various other things that seem to occur at a higher rate in the autistic population than the neurotypical population. It just, you know, adds one more layer of, you know, interesting complication to our lives. But I feel like there's a lot more autistic-led research being done about these types of topics. So we can learn more about you know, how to help autistic people specifically deal with their experiences and co-occurring conditions in a way that honors autistic existence and autonomy and isn't just, you know, whatever someone who hasn't experienced autism cooks up and thinks might be a good idea, which has been a problem in the past.
Right. So is there a difference between autism and autistic spectrum?
That's a great question. No. So the language we use to speak about autism has changed a lot over the years, mostly led by the DSM, the various iterations of the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that outlines various mental health conditions and mental illnesses and includes things like autism as well. Currently, it's the official title is autism spectrum disorder. But in the past, we've also just used the word autism. Most of us just say autism or autistic now. Asperger's used to be a separate diagnosis, was just autism, but without, I believe it was without speech delay or without intellectual disability. And not all people with autism have intellectual disability. Some do, though. Okay. So that's just another, you know, another layer to our experience. And so the autism spectrum kind of refers to the variety of different types of experiences autistic people can have. And it's not a line, it's not a linear spectrum where at one end we have more autistic and the other end we have less autistic. It's actually more like a circle where the circle has little pieces of pie that are bigger or smaller based on, you know, what we struggle with. So, you know, social communication is one of the pieces of that pie, and we might have lower skills in that area. But another piece of the pie is sensory experience, and we might have less struggle in that area. So really, the spectrum refers to this sort of wheel of autistic traits and experiences and the level to which we experience them. And there's also levels. They diagnostically use levels much of the time to describe how much support an autistic person might need. I'm level one. I am the lowest level of support. Although any autistic person will also tell you that those levels can fluctuate from day to day, from week to week, from situation to situation, just depending on what your needs are and what your struggles are. So, you know, a lot of autistic people don't find the levels helpful, but sometimes they can be helpful if you have to quickly tell someone, you know, what you're dealing with, like a paramedic or something like that. So some people do still use them to make a identification of what that person's experiencing in quick order.
Okay. So is autism like hereditary? What causes it? Are they still like researching?
We're still researching it, and we don't know. And I think a lot of autistic people think that we'll never know. It is highly heritable. Oh. Obviously, I'm autistic. Definitely two of my children, and possibly the third one, is autistic as well. He's definitely neurodivergent. He's got a lot of traits already. He just turned 3, so we're looking at getting him tested soon. Oh. So we will find out. But so we don't know, but I just actually read some research lately that are suggesting that our gut is involved, which at first I thought, oh, I don't know about this. But they have been studying things that happen in the gut, even from being in utero, that will affect development, brain development, and development in utero. And this is also can possibly lead to identifying autistic children earlier, which is great because, the sooner you can get the support and accommodations you need, the better outcomes for children who can become, you know, either independent or just have life satisfaction knowing that they are supported in their daily lives and in their endeavors. Mm-hmm. Certainly, my life might have been different if I had had support anytime in the first 34 years of my life that I needed. But that's why I talk about it now, so that people can learn more about autism, learn the signs of autism, and also just really appreciate the disabled experience that is part of normal human diversity.
That's good. So when you mentioned the testing, how does the testing look for autism?
Well, it looks a little different for children versus adults. My testing was about 4 hours of meeting with the psychologist and doing lots of questionnaires and interviewing and talking about my childhood, talking about my mental health, how I experience social situations, just lots of answering questions.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. When you're a child, though, usually, this was our experience, at least so far, you meet with an interdisciplinary team that usually consists of a psychiatrist, some version of a child developmental specialist, like a developmental pediatrician, a psychologist, a speech pathologist, a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, just, you know, all manner of professionals that have education and training in child development. So they know what is typical of children at a certain age, and they know what is different, and if that difference might be related to autism. So our children were diagnosed. They also had about, I think it was about 5 hours of testing between all these professionals over 2 days. They spread them out. They're like 2 weeks apart, so it's not so overwhelming, but it was a lot. It was a lot for me. Mm-hmm. It was a lot for them. But, you know, my son getting diagnosed was the start of this weird, wonderful journey. So we are very thankful that we had access to healthcare to be able to get the diagnoses. Not everyone has that. So that can also lead to children not being identified early and lead to more struggles for them.
Yeah, can only imagine. So like with social situations, do they make you feel uncomfortable?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it really depends. I have people that I know that my body and my brain feel safe around, and I don't feel uncomfortable around them. But I definitely have my closest friends and my husband explain social situations and social exchanges to me all the time. Or if someone says something, I will often take it literally, and they don't mean it literally. And someone needs to tell me that. And it's humorous most of the time now, but it used to cause me a great deal of distress. And especially before I knew I was autistic, I just thought I don't fit in anywhere. I don't understand people. People don't understand me. But now that I am more self-aware and self-accepting, I can have a little giggle about it. And I know I have supportive people around me who will let me know their perception of what a social interaction was, or, you know, what social rules are involved in a situation. I'm a very big rule follower if I know the rules. But one of the sort of ways many autistic people describe being autistic is, you know, not knowing the rules to the game that everyone else is playing and knows the rules to. So you can imagine how frustrating it might be to try to play like a board game. You just don't know what the rules are.
That's right.
You want to play, but you just don't know how. So, you know, it's a lot of watching other people and seeing what other people do and what, you know, social norms are and how you're supposed to behave in situations. And I'm almost 40 now, so I've had many decades of practice doing this. So I'm a lot better in social situations now. And again, I try not to take myself too seriously. I have done plenty of embarrassing things in my life, but you know what? It's okay. I'm just, my brain is different. Yeah, it's totally okay. Everyone does embarrassing things.
Right. Sometimes. Wow. I can only imagine. I know you have a great deal of patience and...
Oh, I try. sometimes mommy just needs a break and goes in the bathroom and locks the door. And then she comes out with more patience. I think that's possibly a universal parent experience.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I'm not a mother, but I hear the stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially as an autistic mother, I'm, you know, frequently overstimulated. There's lots of screaming and weird sounds and singing and all sorts of things going on in my house at any given time. And so sometimes I just need a minute, and then I can collect myself and reemerge.
So what do you do for yourself as far as like self-care? Like, I'm sure you have to, you know, like you said, take time for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do a ton of things, and it's really mostly a ton of little things that I do in my everyday life to make sure that I am taking care of my brain and my body and managing my emotional regulation, which is really my biggest struggle. I try to keep a pretty strict sleep schedule. My sleep is really critical to my overall well-being and my mental health and my emotional regulation. So I try to be pretty strict about getting enough sleep. Sometimes, you know, as a parent with young children, I have night wakings and things, but you know, absent that, I try to get enough sleep. I really work hard at it. I mentioned earlier, I'm a dancer. I go to dance class at least once a week. That really helps. It's obviously, you know, very good exercise, but it also really helps my mental health. It's something I feel good doing. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the heavy movements and the, you know, use of my muscles and my brain and all, you know, everything really helps my emotional regulation. I honestly think that's one of the biggest helps in my life. And it's something I really love. So it's really good for me. I always tell people, I hope you can find your thing, whatever it is that will, you know, that makes you happy and that, you know, keeps you regulated, whatever it may be. I also use, I have these loop, they're called loops, earplugs, and they block out some sound, but not, they're not like traditional earplugs. They don't completely block out sound. So you can hear, still hear people talking to you,
right?
But it blocks out some of the noise. So when everyone's screaming, I put these earplugs in and I take a deep breath.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay, now mommy can function again. But it's really just, it's really just a collection of little things I do. And even at work, I don't have any official, you know, disability accommodations at work, but my team knows that if you want to connect with me, you should either message me or email me. Oh. And if I get an unexpected phone call, that take a message. Versus just shooting it right through towards me. I don't really care for talking on the phone. Okay. But if I can call the person back once I figure out who they are and what they want, then I'm okay. So, you know, I just have these ways of, you know, navigating life that make things a little bit easier for me and make life doable.
Awesome. Awesome. Wow. It's been a joy.
It's been a joy speaking with you.
Very informative, because I'm the first to say I didn't know a lot about autism, but it's been very, very great.
Well, I'm glad you learned some things. Like I said, this is why, you know, I've developed this, you know, self-acceptance, and I'm ready to talk to as many people as I can and make them more aware of autism and disability and that, you know, autistic adults are out there and many of us are being diagnosed late in life. And I hope that it leads to other people's greater awareness of our condition.
Absolutely. Now, as far as, do you think there's a reason why adults are being diagnosed later in life or?
Mm-hmm, I do. I think it's a combination of, you know, not knowing a lot about the condition. For example, women and girls present differently than boys. And most of the diagnostic criteria were originally based on little boys. Oh. So if we're only diagnosing people with the same symptoms little boys have, then lots of women were getting missed. And we were just told we were either shy or, you know, any number of other ways to describe our experiences and not recognize until we were adults that not everyone has these experiences. And so many of us either go looking for ourselves or have a child diagnosed and realize at that time, oh gosh, I'm autistic.
Right.
I also think greater access to medical care has been an enormous improvement in people being able to be assessed just for autism, certainly, but also for mental health issues that are often tied to autism.
Awesome. Tamara, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, it's been great speaking with you, Marla. I'm so glad to share my story and increase awareness.
Yes. And you're in a good place now. And I love that. I love that you want to reach back, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just don't want people to have the negative experiences I've had. And the more information we can share, the better we can support people.
Oh, my. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Your willingness is, you know, to come on my platform and share your story. It's been very informative.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Marla.
Thank you. And I really appreciate your time.
Thanks. I had a great time talking to you.
Absolutely. Have a good one. Okay.
You too.
Thanks.
All right.